Hello and welcome back to the Gucci Podcast. Today we present a collaboration episode by A Vibe Called Tech and Stance Podcast, inspired by the North Face and Gucci collection. Pioneers of the Past is a celebration of four talents who are remapping and rethinking how the black image is presented in fine and contemporary art.
Welcome to Pioneers of the Past, a special Stance Takes made in partnership with Vibe Called Tech for the North Face and Gucci collaboration. Tired of a lack of representation of black people in art? Exhausted by the narratives of suffering surrounding our rare appearances in paintings and photography? Fed up of it being backward when it comes to looking blackwards? Well, you're not alone. Settle down and get comfortable and get ready to be inspired because this programme is for you. We'll bring you the new forces that are curating and making art that challenges the pallid status quo. They're redefining who gets to choose, view and critique the black image, tearing up the orthodoxy. Each in their own way is inspiring new ways of seeing. They are pioneers in remapping and rethinking the place of the black image and how it is presented in art and culture. So let's meet them. From Cambridge, England, is Olayo Akinkabe, who's challenging the academy with her Instagram, A Black History of Art.
I'm a student, art history student at the University of Cambridge, but I also launched the page A Black History of Art this year. On it, I highlight the overlooked black artists, thinkers, sitters, and curators from art history.
From Florida, USA, Renata Chalice, who's building an extraordinary archive of black images at blackarchive.co that's redefining who chooses the images preserved and celebrated.
I wanted to dig deeper into storytelling and just working through images and just fascinated by the ways in which we can storytell the black experience and the black way of life throughout the years. It's a beautiful community. All right.
From Verona, Italy, Theo Amani, an Italian Ghanaian medical student and artist with a passion for finding echoes between the African and European image.
I'm a student at the University of Pavia, but have a critical interest in African contemporary art. For me, like African contemporary art is a point of entry to find a diasporic belonging with different black realities across the globe.
And in London and Paris, Osse Bonsu, a curator in African art, working to portray multi-dimensional images of the black experience.
At the moment, I'm curator of international art at Tate Modern in London. Before I was at Tate, I was an independent curator and I was very much involved with contemporary African art, but also, you know, international art more broadly. And that's really the work that I brought into the Tate. So I was brought in as an international curator to oversee the Africa Acquisitions Committee, which is a committee that allows Tate to financially support African artists through the acquisitioning of works and through that then expanding our collection.
We start the programme with our two archivists, separated by the Atlantic, both building visual archives that are challenging established preconceptions of black images in the digital space. Both are driven by a compulsion to challenge the lazy thinking that dominates the art world in relation to the depiction of black people. This is particularly true of Olayo, whose Black History of Art Instagram exploded onto the scene earlier last year. She told me how it all began.
Well, I started it in February and it really kind of took off in June when I did a takeover of the Great Woman Artists Instagram page. And that's kind of when it like got exposure and then started gaining so many followers. I started it out of like my frustration towards the lack of black representation on my course. So I knew going into it that art history was a very kind of traditional, very European, Eurocentric course to study just as a degree. But I don't think I realized just how little we would be paying attention to black artists. So in my first year, I didn't actually look at a single black artist, which I didn't realize until I started the page. So all the black figures were kind of represented in very subordinate roles or kind of serving white figures. And I guess that's because that those are the paintings that you see. Those are the paintings that we study, all the canonized paintings that show black figures as secondary to white figures, which I guess is also what you get in, when you go into most museums like the National Gallery and like non-modern art museums. Like I had it, the idea in my head from first year of like something called A Black History of Art. And the name is very crucial because it's not, I'm not saying this is black history of art and then there's regular history of art. I'm saying this is everything that is black about history of art. So it really kind of started because I was doing a contemporary art course at uni, and this was the first time that I had been exposed to black artists. So we looked at some artists in America and here. So I remember we looked at Glenn Ligon, we looked at Lorna Simpson, and just kind of like icons of like American and British art who are black. And it was so, for the first time, inspiring to me to be studying like art that was created by black people, because obviously in my head I hadn't realized, because I'm not like keeping tabs on the artists I'm studying, but I hadn't actually had the experience of seeing art or studying in detail art created by black people. So because I enjoyed it so much, and that was probably the moment at which I was enjoying my degree the most, when I had the opportunity to look at art by, you know, artists of the same color as me, I was enjoying it so much, and I was kind of upset about the fact that I knew that the other papers that I would do in the years to come wouldn't really have any black representation. So I wanted to kind of continue that, and that's why I started the page.
Renata Chalis currently lives in Florida after many years in Chicago. She began sharing images on Tumblr in 2013, and her archive evolved into the website blackarchives.co. Its Instagram has more than 350,000 followers, and it's a treasure trove of images. I asked her to explain how she goes about curating her work.
Pulling from, you know, the archives that are already, you know, available. And yeah. So that's part of that process of uncovering and exploring, because I feel like the images are, they're available through different archives and libraries across the internet. And so the hard part, or the dirty part, the dirty work, right, is sifting through those images, you know, sifting through those libraries and archives and pulling out those moments that just really speak to you, and then just sharing them. I mean, there's really no rhyme or reason as to why I may choose a photo or a series of photos or a home video, but I think they all just play along in a larger part of just bringing this experience and making it accessible in a way that we can just kind of tap into that memory or tap into that resource.
Did you just fall into curation? I would love to know a little bit more about your curatorial journey and also reframing the black image. Tell me about why that was so crucial to you.
It was a very natural and organic process for me. You know, I don't have a degree in curatorial practice or an art degree or anything of that nature. And so I feel like the way that I approach it, it's outside of academia. It's outside of a, you know, your typical institution, but it's accessible. It makes it accessible to everyone, right? And so the idea or the goal behind, you know, the way that I present image through memory and tapping into that through my personal lived experience, collective memory, you know, as a community, as a Black community, as a Black collective.
Despite their different paths, Renata and Elio are on the same mission to find and center Black imagery in the visual arts and bring it to the masses. In Elio's work, a recurring theme is an interest in the models used in fine art, known as sitters. Here she explains how their stories reveal hidden histories.
With most of the Black sitters that I write about, I don't actually know their name or who they were, what they did. So I could just kind of speculate on what their role could have been with what I can find in books and on the internet. And so I guess it is kind of reframing or kind of shifting the frame, if you like, or shifting the focus, especially when there's also a white figure in it. So like, for instance, Manet's Olympia, if I was talking about it on my page, I would only talk about the maid who is called, her name was recently discovered to be Laura. And I would just kind of focus on her and her role as an artist model and who she might have been and what we know about her. So I think it is, I'm definitely trying to sort of like shift the focus and say, these are the figures who we've ignored. These are the figures we don't study and are on the curriculums and our degrees. And let's like talk about them. Let's talk about their role in the painting. a painting like Manet's Olympia, you have like the maid in the background and she's serving the white woman who's lying on the bed, and she's presenting some flowers. So she's kind of in this painting to act as like chiaroscuro, which is like the light and the dark. So she's like sort of presenting like an opposite to enhance the whiteness of the figure that's lying on the bed. And I think that's probably the extent to which I would have spoken about her in my degree, or that's the extent to which a lecture might have discussed the maid. For me, I feel like this is the center and I want to shift the focus to this. I'm not trying to marginalize them. I'm not trying to say, look at this like figure on the outskirts. I'm saying let's focus on this person.
What challenges do you think you faced so far? I'm interested in that.
So because obviously most of what I'm doing is on Instagram, the biggest thing has been trying to present like a view of the paintings that is unbiased, because I'm the only person writing the captions. So I don't want to put out all this information that is just my opinion. So I feel like finding a balance between just talking about a painting in a way that isn't just projecting my viewpoint onto it, but also still being able to express my opinion. So I'll always put like in brackets, like in my opinion. So I think that has been the hardest thing with the posts. Probably the thing that always comes up with paintings of Black people is that everyone seems to assume that they're suffering. So it's always linked to the Black person's race and not linked to the individual person. And that is kind of frustrating for me, because on the one hand, yes, like I always want to consider what it is to be a Black person in the world that we live in and the context of race and the burden of racism and everything. But I feel like it's a bit narrow to constantly look at Black figures in paintings and always just like think about their like suffering. You know what I mean? Like sometimes that can be, it can be about the individual person, and an expression doesn't necessarily mean like a non-smiling figure doesn't mean that the figure is deeply unhappy and it must be because of racism or something like that. I feel like it often tends to be very reductive when people interpret paintings with Black people in them. They're like, oh, because of this, this and this context, like socio-political context, this is why this person looks like this. But actually everyone lives their individual lives. I don't know if you've seen the Lynette Yadom-Boache show at the Tate Britain. It's incredible, but her paintings are just like, they're figural paintings of Black people, but it's just people like sort of enjoying the company of other Black people or dancing or at the beach or like just completely, just like living as a human being and not tied to like any kind of idea of suffering.
This challenge of not only finding, but then interpreting images of authentic Black experience is one Renata is familiar with. She talks about how choice and interpretation should be approached with confidence and clear vision, because now is the time.
Honestly, I feel like now we're in a place where we can be more visible. And so as we're reimagining these spaces, we can create our own rules, right? And be intentional about the ways in which we archive our stories and be intentional about the way that we need to document our stories so that the future doesn't look as it does right now. We can be intentional about the way that we want to see ourselves in the future. One of the biggest challenges is if I want to be inclusive or show an image of, you know, something that we know exists or has existed, but that image just does not appear in the archives for me to, you know, dig out, bring to light and share with a larger community. The way that we can move around that is, you know, occasionally I'll do, you know, an open call for images and submissions. And hopefully through those submissions, you know, we're able to tap into stories that are outside of the, you know, the digital libraries.
For the program, we asked our guests to talk us through an image that encapsulated their approach or what's important to them. Alayo chose a picture that marked the beginning of it all. It's a portrait of Madeleine, formerly known as Portrait of a Negress.
This is also the first painting that I posted on my page, A Black History of Art, the foundations of my like love for art history. It's called Portrait of Madeleine, and it's a painting in the Louvre. And it's actually by a white artist called Marie-Guillemine Benoit. And it depicts a Black woman who they recently, I think the Louvre, the curators at the Louvre recently discovered that her name was Madeleine. So the figure is presented sitting down, and she has a white sort of head wrap around her head, and she's wearing a white dress, and her like her right breast is like bared, and the only other colors kind of apart from white and the sort of beige of the background is blue and red, which kind of speaks to the patriotism of the tricolor in like in France, the French flag. This painting really got me into history of art itself because I spoke about it at school for a competition, and I was thinking about the sitter mainly, and this is where the whole sitter's obsession comes from. I was like fascinated by this. I wanted to find out more about her, but there was so little I could do, and also I was still at school. There was speculation that she could have been a slave turned enslaved person turned servant. And I was thinking about how she probably didn't have much say in how she was presented, and then she was more like treated as an object by the artist. I was just thinking about the tension between portraiture and just kind of making this painting of a black person with the psychology of whom you're not trying to engage with. So at the time, I thought that the figure was represented as very kind of dignified and elegant. I was kind of shocked to see a black figure represented in this way.
Renata's choice of imagery was Gordon Parks' segregation story. Like Alayo, she's interested in reaching beyond the way we are conditioned to understand the position of blackness within an image.
Yeah, you know, that collection of work by Gordon Parks is just, it's breathtaking for me because it, you know, a lot of his work prior to and thereafter, it's black and white. And so we really get to see these moments in color, and the color is vivid color, you know. And to be in Alabama or anywhere in the South, you know, and as a black man, you know, this body of work, it just really speaks to me. And especially with me being from the South, you know, I was born and raised in the South before, you know, relocating to Chicago for quite some time.
Right.
And so even through doing this work, you know, away from, you know, being home, you know, I can always go back to these images and go back to these photographs, this body of work, and feel home. It feels familiar. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. He's just an incredible photographer.
Actually, you just saying that just made me really think, because at first the image is like really striking. So there is a woman, a African American woman, holding a white baby, like she's the nanny, and then there's a white woman, I assume the baby's mother, sitting sort of next to her. But then it's also, you know, as you said, it's very much a kind of segregated scene. But mm-hmm. actually, you're right. This story and its importance, it's also about Gordon Parks kind of getting there, right? And actually being the person taking the shot.
Yeah. And so, I mean, we do see those moments within that segregation, within the segregation story. We see the moments of, you know, them sitting in a, you know, a bus station. I believe that's the photograph that you're referring to. Mm. And she's just holding the baby, and the woman is just, you know, looking off in the air, you know, and that photo, it, you know, it's embedded in my memory. But there's so many other photos within that collection where it's, we know that we're in a segregated time and in a segregated space, but, you know, it still captures the everyday black moment. So there's a photo within that series where there are two women, you know, standing outside, you know, on either side of a clothesline, just, you know, talking and hanging up clothes. And, you know, the sheets are hanging and falling with the wind, and they're just colorful and vibrant. And that's the part that really sticks with me, because I think about my childhood and growing up, where my grandmother would go outside and hang up sheets and clothes on the clothesline, you know? And so it's always about bringing it back to something that's familiar to me.
And there's also a wonderful picture as well of a couple, a black couple sitting down, and they've got flowers in the shot, and they've got a lovely, it looks like a very, very cozy sofa, actually. It's sort of bright red. They're just sort of relaxing and posing. But then there's pictures of children together, black children, white children. So, yeah, this is a huge body of work. But as you were saying, it's also just very much, you know, everyday images. And tell me a little bit finally why you think why this work was so important to you, and why you come back to Gordon Parks.
I come back to it because it's like we don't see these images like outside of this body of work. Where do these images exist? Mm. And so it's something that I'm always coming back to, always referencing. He's the master of his craft. And even though I'm not a photographer, I still study his work, study, you know, the ways in which he captured those moments. And the way that he tells a story. So I may study the photograph a bit different from an actual photographer, but I feel like the message is clear, you know, and it reminds us that no matter where we are within this journey, whether I'm a curator or if I'm a photographer, that it's important to document, you know, not only for the moment, you know, as, you know, what he was doing, but also for, you know, for us to reflect back on and for us to use as a guide as we move forward.
Through their work, Renata and Elio build places where the Black image lives for itself rather than some kind of abstraction from the white norm. Times have changed dramatically, and it's reflected in this revolution of agency. From Verona, Italy, Theo Amani, an Italian Ghanaian medical student and visual researcher with a passion for finding echoes between the African and European image.
So the medium where I find greater resonance is art photographs, especially family album photographs. Because, like, to me, they narrate a sense of diasporic formation. Especially here in Italy, we don't have a lot of visualities that tells the story of the African immigrants that came here in the early 90s. So the only way to know about this history and these stories is through the photo albums. So I'm really interested in that aspect, and of course talking about art in general, being born and raised here in Italy and not having an approach, a contact, not being exposed to Black art, I try to find a way to rediscover this cultural inheritance. So the project started by accident, let's say so. So I was studying for a radiology exam. So I was looking at the X-ray scans of various patients. And in a moment of procrastination, I started to look at images of art just to breathe a bit. And it started out, I guess, at the end of 2017 when the New York Times published an article talking about Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, and the article was accompanied by a photo by Kerry Mae Weems, which echoed one of his photographs of the Kitchen Table series. So I paired those two images, and that from that point on, I just wanted to find other similarities that I could remember of, and there is a quote I always like to share by the art critic John Berger at the beginning of his book Way of Seeing, and he says that the child look before it can speak, and for me, and like to me, it was the same in doing this project, because at the beginning I didn't have a language. I was just looking at images and find these echoes among realities that were apparently contrasting, and then I tried to find a language to support this project, and a help I found in building a language. I got it from the words of conceptual artist Lorraine O'Grady, who made a series entitled Miscegenated Family Album, where she created diptychs pairing family photos with archaeological photos of Nefertiti. And when asked in an interview about this series, she said that for her it was always a question of both and. Being a diasporic subject herself, she always tried to contain different point of views. I think her words sounds true for me as well, because in this project I try to show visually this in-betweenness that I live as a diasporic subject, as a person of Ghanaian origin, born and raised in Italy. Some of the diptychs, can have a social meaning, let's say so, and others are more like visual play, visual rhyme. So in this first one, I wanted to pair this fresco by Andrea Mantegna, and this fresco is in the Camera degli Sposi in Mantova. And the photograph I paired the fresco with is by the Mexican photographer Manuel Carrillo. And I just love the poetic touch of the little child holding the hand of presumably her mother, his mother, that echoes the way the child holds tight to the arm of his father. The title of the project is Echoes and Agreements. And the title, I got the title from a text by Teju Cole in his book Blind Spot. In one of the texts in Blind Spot, where Teju Cole accompanies his photographs with his own text, he was describing a picture taken in Berlin where there was a man seated on a wheelchair in the foreground, and echoing the presence of a man in the background next to a tree. And in the text, Teju Cole writes, the two men were not aware of the echoes that they created. Ci sono migliaia di echi accordi a ogni istante. Rimangono invisibili, quasi nessuno viene registrato, a meno che non intervenga la fotografia. Okay, so there are thousands of such echoes and agreements every minute. Almost all go unseen, and almost none are recorded unless photography intervenes. So in a similar way, I wanted to intervene in the history of art and record these echoes and agreements that we can find. And of course, being of African descent, being African and living in Europe, it was kind of immediate for me to find this visual conversation among my two cultural backgrounds.
I think you've done so well at really conveying what, you know, as you said, to the visual conversation, to connect your two backgrounds, but also just for me looking at them, you know, they are speaking to each other really beautifully. And, you know, that they're so varied as well, which I really like about it. There's one where it might just be a hand, or we have one where there's a picture. It's actually Nina Simone, isn't it, reading to her daughter. And then there's another picture of a woman, like an older picture, where she's reading to her daughter. And there are so many conversations in this. How do you think immigration or migration, do you think, has shaped the portrayals of Black people in visual art that you've seen?
I think visual art is a great testimony of the Black presence in Italy, and we can find representation of Black people dating back to the 13th century. So those representations tells us that the presence of Black people in the Italian soil is not a novelty. Public sphere view us as the sort of let's say new citizen that are trying to be part of the social landscape of the country. The biggest challenge for us here in Italy is to find a link between these three different realities of the Black presence in Italy in order to affirm our rights, because we are conducting different struggles. Because, for instance, the children of African immigrants are conducting the struggle for citizenship, and whereas the refugee, the migrants who are crossing the sea, conducting a struggle for hospitality, though both struggles are under the let's say semantic umbrella of hospitality, but the hues are slightly different.
Theo's images, along with Elio's and Renata's collections, are examples of how a new cohort of Black artists and curators are resetting the parameters of how the Black image is appreciated. But it's not only about the image, but also about new independent frameworks of understanding, new rules. But how do we reach towards a new expression of Black and diasporic art that includes and represents everyone? Now that's a challenge. Someone who's been thinking about this a lot is Ose Bonsu. Ose has recently been appointed International Curator at London's Tate Modern.
In order to make a story inclusive, one shouldn't kind of aim for universality, because what we so often see throughout the history of art is stories that we thought of as being universal and could be applied to any context weren't in fact universal, because they were specific often to Western culture and Western ideas of the image and its representation. Because as you mentioned, the African diaspora is so vast, and actually no one story is alike, and actually artists particularly now, I think, are really claiming to hold space for that complexity, and they don't want to have their work merely kind of shoehorned into an existing narrative, but they'd like to create new ones that reflect their own experiences. I think that in a way is possibly the most challenging thing about where we're at the moment in terms of thinking about the African diaspora, is that we know this experience to be so multiple, and whether it's through literature, music, art, people or artists rather are expressing that in very specific ways. And I think the role of the curator then becomes more nuanced, because it's not enough just to gather those perspectives and say, you know, here is a show of let's say Black perspectives or African perspectives. It's about thinking about why those perspectives are important and how they might relate to one another or not. And I think that in my role at Tate, one of the things that I try to push against quite often is the idea that African art is a kind of monolith and it can only be thought of in specific terms, when in fact it speaks to lots of varied traditions that are as much about, you know, African religious and spiritual traditions as they are of the traditions of, let's say, you know, Western abstract art or art that deals specifically with ideas of gender. So I think there are so many interesting dialogues to be had around this, and I think the role of the curator is really to kind of complicate those dialogues and push it further.
Absolutely. And you talked earlier and you said the kind of narrative surrounding Black art, let's say, and the Black image. How do you think it's changed since you started work and your curatorial practice? Have you seen a bit of a shift?
I think it absolutely has shifted, in the sense that when I was studying for my master's in history of art, there was very much a sense that if you wanted to undertake a serious dissertation subject, it had to be something that already had art historical importance. And often what was deemed important were, let's say, art histories that had been defined both by the European and the American academies. So there wasn't a huge space for Blackness or Afro-diasporic representation. And I think that was, in a way, at first a point of frustration, and then it almost became something to kind of work against. And what I found myself doing is trying to connect multiple histories. for instance, about the early French avant-garde and what was called at the time negrophilia, which is the kind of French avant-garde's fixation on the black body, and let's say later representation of the black figure by black artists. So what does it mean to have those two perspectives kind of rub up against each other? And in what ways do they reveal things about, you know, desire, race, sexuality, that are, I think, very much still prevalent in our society? So it was, I think, about trying to find those art historical links and in a way thinking about the ways in which art history could be relevant to more than just academics.
For his choice of image, Osse selected one by Ratimi Fane Kayode.
So this is kind of a typical image for Ratimi in the sense that it's at the core a kind of male nude, but it's so much more complex than that. And of course, you know, people have written about his work in relation to Robert Mapplethorpe, who in a way depicted the black male body in a very hypersexualized way in New York at a specific moment. What Ratimi's done with, you know, this particular body of work is to really think through ways in which the kind of the black body can be reinscribed within a narrative of spirituality. And what you see with the subject kind of holding a candle is this incredible kind of delicacy to the image and a kind of tenderness that's there
very
throughout.
Calming.
Exactly, throughout Ratimi's work. And there was something so distinctive about the way in which also many of his sitters were relations, close friends. And that I think was really important to him, that somehow it wasn't just the act of taking someone else's image and kind of recreating it purely for his own desire, but it was about, in a way, I think, creating a space within which this, within which the black body could be reunited with a sense of ancestry and a sense of tradition. And I think that's come through in what so many young artists are doing today, whether it's an artist like Dineo Sechipo Pepe or even someone like Semi Beloji. They're artists who are, you know, decisively coming from different parts of Africa with very different perspectives. But they're interested in this idea that, you know, our history is so complex and it's so layered, and what it demands are, in a way, a kind of calling upon ancestral memory. And in a way, the art becomes a kind of portal that allows for that communion.
In the aftermath of a year where George Floyd's death led to much institutional soul-searching, some light touch, some not, I asked Osse what he thought was changing.
If you think about, you know, more and more, you know, academies are now seeking out scholars of Black studies or African art or African American art. And I think that's a really important thing. But I also see a kind of sense that maybe people that overlook those histories, even in their professional capacity as writers or curators or academics, are now starting to really think about that historical neglect. And how they may have been complicit in those exclusionary tactics, let's say. So I think that there's a kind of a rising consciousness, I think, around these issues, but I don't think we're anywhere near the change that we need to see. And I would say that because it comes from a perspective of, I think, how stories are told and thinking about the authenticity of those stories. So, you know, it's one thing for someone to say, you know, let's include an artist of color in an exhibition because it makes the show more diverse. And then it's another level of attention altogether to suggest that that artist is worthy of the same kind of historical reading that their white counterparts have been having for, you know, decades, if not centuries. So it's about, in a way, it's about correcting the record, but it's also about doing that deep, nuanced historical work into thinking about not about a kind of new canon, but about a kind of a new constellation in a way of art history.
Definitely. This is really exciting, actually. And you're right. It's definitely another thing to actually really put lots of research and also, as I always say, budget behind it as well, because that tells you a lot of what, you know, is the priorities. But are there sort of certain challenges that you feel you come up against as within your specific role as a curator, would you say?
Yeah, I think the challenges have to do, and I think this is something that hopefully your audience can relate to, is maybe the sense of, even though, you know, the let's say the black community that have a stake in and are involved in organizing exhibitions are very active at the moment, and there is a huge amount being done across the board. And what excites me so much now is that institutions are in the positions where they really have to actually now listen to those artists and listen to those curators and those voices. But I think so often what was the case with Black creatives, working in these large industries was that we were kind of expected to take what was given to us. And I remember speaking to an artist recently about this and about the fact when they were given solo exhibitions, they would just say, oh, you know, I don't care about the artist fee. It's not a problem. And I think that kind of idea somehow that we should just be happy to be there has to dissipate. Effectively, what I'm saying is that it's not enough to have a seat at the table. We have to come to the table knowing exactly what we want out of the institution or out of that particular opportunity. And that's what I would encourage lots of Black creatives to think about. One of the challenges has always been the lack of community. Actually, ironically, within the Black community as it relates to the art world. And I think that's had to do with lots of things, a lack of institutional positions, a lack of opportunities for artists. And it's something that I think in my career, I've tried to really work against. So, you know, what would it mean to practice kind of radical generosity and to open doors to others rather than to see oneself as a gatekeeper? And that's why whenever a younger curator reaches out or an emerging artist who wants advice, I'm always happy to help. And I don't know that I necessarily received that when I was starting out, but for sure I did have mentors and people that were really pivotal, in fact, in terms of building my career. But I guess that's one of the challenges. I think that we need to build a sense of community, because I think to a large extent, it's the thing that I think holds us back, right? The lack of being able to acknowledge that we need one another. And actually, even if you're not necessarily aligned with someone's aesthetic or intellectual position, there aren't enough of us to be competitive in the way that I often find that creative fields can be when it comes to Black creatives. So I'm interested in that. And I guess, you know, as far as my role at Tate is concerned, that's something that I will continue to work towards and think about.
But where do we go from here? How do we represent the vast range of Black creative expression and map it in a way that creates an evolving framework of understanding? One that is intentionally chosen to reflect Black life and art as it is, as it feels. Whilst it's reassuring that Ose has witnessed some change, and I've been amazed by the similarities and parallel thinking happening across the globe, I keep hearing Renata's plea for intentionality, that now is the time to embrace our revolutionised agency in curiosity and action, as she and Alayo have. As the establishment response to BLM has shown, there's a long way to go before equitable structures exist, or even desired by some. And do we need to ask ourselves whether we're all doing enough to encourage and build an art community characterised by the radical generosity Ose spoke of? Enough to challenge ourselves to authentically showcase the Black image in all its nuances? Do we too often value a kind of Black imagery that sells or plays into notions of a particular moment or connects to a view of community in order to fit in? Relying on some kind of misplaced sense of kinship, which inadvertently creates boundaries, borders, or even invisible lines that obscures the true expression of the Black experience on this earth and in our own imaginations, which is the experience after all. Thanks to Ose, Theo, Alayo and Renata for coming on to Stance. And thanks to Vibe Called Tech, Gucci and The North Face for supporting this edition of Stance Takes. I'm Crystal Genesis. The producer was Nicole Logan. The executive producer, Charlie Bell. Digital production by Joelle Duncan and Farrell Mahan. Sound design by Axel Cacoutier. And this was a Stance Studios production made with Vibe Called Tech for The North Face and Gucci collaboration. See you on the first of the month.
Thank you for listening. Discover more about the podcast in collaboration with Stance and A Vibe Called Tech in the episode's notes.